This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Like rats eating your feet? That's final straw. I'm out of there.
Welcome to Please Bless This Podcast. This is the podcast where two sisters talk about all things Mormon and pop culture. And sometimes trash Mormon films.
Sometimes the stupidest movie you could ever imagine.
Yeah. Gets discussed and...
No offense.
Eviscerated.
Yeah.
I'm Elisa.
I'm Katie.
What's the terrible film we're discussing today, Katie?
Oh, today we're going to be talking about The Other Side of Heaven.
Mm-hmm. Classic Mormon cinema.
The classic 2001 high budge for Mormon films.
Mm-hmm.
Annie Hathaway.
Yeah.
Disney distributed.
Mm.
Beautiful film.
It has the most credibility of any like explicitly Mormon film for sure because of that Disney distribution.
Mm-hmm.
The star power. We have, mm-hmm, Anne Hathaway, but even the star Christopher Gorman, he's like been in stuff for sure.
Yeah,
he was in Popular, he was in Ugly Betty.
Sure,
he's in lots of stuff.
There wasn't anything wrong with him.
Not according to some of the reviews I read, but sure. I actually read an interview with the director of this movie, Mitch Davis, who is a Mormon,
right,
who said that he chose Christopher Gorham for this role because he had a light in his eyes.
And I can see that. I can see what he saw. I can see the little Mormon, the little squirrely,
yeah,
teenage Mormon guy.
Yeah.
I see it. You know, and I think that that's where he went right for me. I don't think he was necessarily a great actor, but I bought in.
I bought him as a Mormon missionary, 100%.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So a little context. This movie is based on the memoir of John H. Groberg, mm-hmm, who was a missionary in Tonga in the 1950s and then went on to be a general authority. And he did a fireside at BYU, my first semester at BYU, about this movie.
Wow.
And President Hinckley was there. And the messaging was like, throw your money at this. This is a, yeah, big deal for the Mormons.
Yeah, UGD better get out there and take your friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, this is going to be this huge missionary tool.
Yeah. Yeah. They really tried to pump the, like, the spiritual experiences, the, like, miracles, mm-hmm, into this film. And it's just so funny. It's like one of those things that's like such a delight to Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a Mormon loves to see that, like, missionary performing the miracle blessing on the child.
Yeah.
But to anybody else watching, they're like, and that's when I turned it off.
Yeah.
You know,
I can't remember how I felt about it in 2001. I don't think that I like loved it. It wasn't something I felt compelled to like rewatch again and again.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely wasn't self-aware enough and world aware enough to recognize how problematic this movie is as an 18-year-old. Like watching it now, I'm horrified.
Yeah.
By every how imperialistic and racist and sexist this movie is.
And it like doesn't paint the church in a positive light. Like it's basically like this kid getting put through the ringer in the first place, in the first act, just to get to his mission.
Which honestly, the abuse of the missionaries rang true for me. That was true to my experience as a Mormon missionary. Like it's a brutal job and the church is just like, good luck.
Yeah.
There's this scene I did not remember at all at the very end of the movie where the people in Tonga where Elder Groberg has been serving for 3 years give him his burial clothes that they've been holding on to for the 3 years he's been there because Salt Lake sent them there like in for when this kid dies.
Yes.
Here are his burial clothes. Don't tell him you have them.
Yeah. Gross. I was on my feet.
That is shocking. And it's played off like a joke. And I'm like, the church sent that guy there to die.
To die. They were like 75% chance this kid dies.
Oh my gosh. And how is that okay? It was just a very different experience watching it. From my current vantage point, I was horrified.
Yeah, throughout my first note, there's something about an unapologetic white savior tale.
Mm-hmm.
Because from the jump, it's just, you know, this, oh, he's going through so much to get there and he's gonna, like, he's Jesus Christ himself, you know?
He's made this ultimate sacrifice and so... Yeah. He must be holy. He must be trustworthy.
Right.
I mean, there's a scene where his mission companion, who's a native Tongan, they're having a conversation and the Elder Groberg character is like, why do you believe in me so much? And the guy's like, you wouldn't have come all this way to lie.
Right. Great.
As if the act of like inserting yourself into another culture makes you like inherently honest, inherently good.
And they really paint him out to be like a miracle worker. Like from the moment he gets there, he's like frustrated by not knowing the language. And can we talk about the sequence where he sits out on the spit in the water and learns the language by reading the Bibles together?
And it makes it seem like he just sits out there for days.
Yes.
Basically not eating, not drinking, not sleeping until he can speak fluent Tongan.
And that happened.
I'm going to tell you that that didn't happen.
Yeah.
There's just no way that that
There's happened. No way. Well, no, that's not how learning a language works.
And they're trying to play it up like it was this miraculous thing. And he like showed his dedication and so the Lord just blessed him with like a gift of tongues basically.
Right. Yes.
Which is how the church frames learning languages on a mission. It's always framed as this is a gift of tongues from God, not this is a systematic like approach to learning language. Right. And it
you're
will
a human
get
you,
by.
you can learn other languages with time and practice, and it's easier when you're in the native speaking country. So
right.
Go. Yeah.
I'm calling bullshit on that one. It didn't happen that way.
100%. Okay. I have some funny notes. Can I just
Please.
Rattle some
yeah,
of
yeah,
them
yeah.
off? So the movie starts and they're at BYU in 1953 at a sock hop.
Mm-hmm.
And the title screen flashes BYU 1953. And my brain immediately went, haha, no thanks.
This is not a comedy. This is a dark story.
Yeah, immediately darkness fell over the film. And sock hop choreographed dancing.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Also didn't happen. The way she's getting flipped and her skirts are flying up, I was like, BYU 1953, that is not happening, Anne Hathaway.
She would get expelled.
You are being a little immodest, sweetheart.
Throughout, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
A true believing Mormon would not wear that dress on the beach.
No.
No, anyway, go on.
Some serious quivering between them, mm-hmm. like on the swing set when they have their little It's a Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart moon moment.
He's like really, the way we're introduced to their relationship is that he's kind of jealous and possessive of her. And that's apparently cute and charming, and she loves that. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of their dynamic throughout the movie. Like, her only role in the movie beyond those opening scenes is just we hear her voice as she's like narrating the letters she sent to him in Tonga for 3 years. Yeah. And that's the only thing tying their relationship together.
Right.
And then every now and then he like hallucinates and he sees her running on a beach in a white dress, like a perfume ad.
Right.
That's it.
That's but all.
Even in the letters, she's just like, maybe I love you. Maybe I'll marry this other guy. I don't know. What do you think?
He proposed to me. I told him I'll think about it.
He proposed again. Can you believe it? Oh my gosh. And I'm like, this is not a real relationship.
No.
And these are not likable people, and their dynamic doesn't seem that healthy to me.
No. And you know, needless to say, this guy's gonna come back with some pretty serious PTSD.
Yep.
And you don't know each other, and she's been holding out for 3 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of time for resentment to build up and expectations to build up.
Mm. It's going to be quite the honeymoon phase.
Oof.
Yeah, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. On his way to Tonga. So on his way to Tonga, I mean, how long does it take? Like 50 days or?
A long time.
A long time, because he gets stopped. Nobody is expecting him anywhere he lands when he's in mm-hmm. Samoa, when he's in New Zealand. Like, nobody is expecting him. He ends up in jail in Fiji. Because
mm-hmm.
they're like, we don't know who you are. You're going to jail. I made a note that the jail in Fiji didn't look that bad. because I think they just threw him in like a barn or something. He was just chilling with some animals playing his trumpet.
Yeah.
And that was kind of nice.
The trumpet is a supporting character in this film. Yeah, the journey to Tonga was brutal and disorganized. And again, it made me think about how missions are so traumatic. You're just like sent out by the church with like not a lot of care and concern for your well-being and a lot of oversight to make sure you're going to be like safe. Yeah. I lived in some real shitholes on my mission.
Yeah.
And I was in the United States. Oh, you know, like, I can't imagine what missionaries in across the world are faced with.
Yeah.
As like 18, 19 year olds. It's brutal and unnecessarily brutal. Before he even leaves, he's at the train station with his family, and his mom says, "Don't come home early." As if that would be the worst thing that could ever happen.
Yeah. Cut to them eating Thanksgiving dinner, not having heard from him for 3 months.
Yeah.
And their family's just munching away on their Thanksgiving
because there's been
dinner.
A hurricane and the island's been cut off from supplies and they're slowly starving to death.
Yes.
And the worst thing that could happen would be for him to come home early.
Ooh.
He might die, Mom.
Yeah. Good thing that guy gave him his jam. Good thing that old man died for your son.
Jeez.
I know.
Like, get a grip, Mormon parents. If you think it's some great tragedy for your kid to come home early from a mission, there are a lot worse things that could happen to them.
Seriously.
including a lot of things that happen on a mission.
Right.
In my notes under like the trauma of emissions, I wrote special shout out to the rats. They ate the soles of his feet.
I was going to say if like rats eating your feet, that's final straw. I'm out of there. Rats ate the soles of his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Now I remembered that scene differently, and that it might have just been my like 10-year-old brain.
Uh-huh.
I remember seeing the rats.
Ew, you created rats in your memory of this.
Yeah, I actually hadn't thought of that since yesterday. I should have looked that up. Maybe that's just Mandela effect or something, but
that's a key when that thing. Scene
came on, it just showed him waking up and putting his feet on the floor, and there are like pools of blood, like he's bleeding out because these rats just went to town on the soles of his feet while he slept.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, I remember, you know,
that's a trauma response.
Maybe that was a very messed up scene.
It was super graphic. Yeah. And then also there's all this like loaded religious pressure around it because there's like this competing minister on the island who's like, well, the rats ate his feet because he's being punished. He's right. Like a mess, you know, God's punishing him or whatever.
Right.
And so he decides with the help of the other Mormons on the island that he's going to walk again after 3 days. To prove that God has healed him.
Yeah. Because he's Jesus.
His feet are still like gnawed to bits and bleeding. Yeah. And he's just walking on it anyway.
I know. It didn't make a lot of sense. It didn't land.
And
the
music swells like there's been some miracle. And I'm like, no, he's just unnecessarily suffering.
Right. He's still horribly injured.
To create this illusion of a miracle.
Right.
So we've dug into the movie already, but just backing up to context for the movie.
Oh, sure.
A couple of things I want to point out. One is to just point listeners back to episode 4 of the podcast where we reviewed Pride and Prejudice, a Latter-day comedy. Because we dug into this like early 2000s Mormon cinema boom in that episode. And I think that's really relevant context for this film. It was just right at the peak of that. Mm-hmm. One other thing too is that Mitch Davis, the director, did this extremely bizarre interview for the Deseret News just a couple of months ago.
I know.
The title of the article is "Which More Accurately Portrays Latter-day Saints Under the Banner of Heaven or the Other Side of Heaven?"
I wonder.
Just comparing those two things is so funny to me. And the article is truly, it doesn't really address Under the Banner of Heaven at all.
No, he's just rambling about his movie.
Yes. And it's clearly just trying to emphasize the Other Side of Heaven was an accurate portrayal of Mormons, obviously, because it was made by a Mormon guy, and here he is talking about Mormonism so positively.
Right.
It was just kind of unhinged.
Yes.
But a couple of things he says that I thought were interesting. He was like, the Other Side of Heaven should have been the beginning of making high budget Mormon films instead of this like kind of anomaly.
Right.
And that's such a shame. And he kind of is blaming like cancel culture and just like, he says there's too much anti-Mormon detritus out there that would keep, you know, Disney from distributing an explicitly Mormon film or Anne Hathaway starring in one these days.
Yeah.
And that to him is so clearly like a big problem. And then he says this is the best quote. "It would be interesting to see what a Latter-day Saint filmmaker could do with a compelling story and a $150 million budget like Top Gun Maverick. No LDS filmmakers have ever been given these tools."
And they so deserve them. You know, I mean, to be fair, I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Out of a $150
billion dollar Mormon movie.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
I mean, if Tom Cruise is starring in a movie about Mormons, I'm going to that movie.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? You know what I really do want to see? Let's combine a couple of things here. I want to see the $150 million budget Mormon movie, but I want it to be the like cut scenes from Under the Banner of Heaven, where it's like Joseph Smith and the Way Back in Days mm-hmm. being super creepy. I want them to make a $150 million movie out of that.
Oh yeah. I mean, Mormon history has great source material for like a big budget Hollywood movie.
Yeah, that
would someone
kill.
Wants to go there, but the Mormons are going to hate it. I was thinking about the church in Tonga, and I know we've talked about mm-hmm. this a little bit, especially in our Manti Te'o episode.
Yeah.
But explicitly focusing on Tonga, I was like, what is the situation with the church in Tonga these days?
Mm-hmm.
And the church website claims over 68,000 members in Tonga, which is over 64% of the total population. There's a temple, there are church schools, there are 21 stakes, multiple missions. So well over half the population they're claiming are members of the church. However, there was a census survey in 2016 in Tonga where 18.62% of Tongans self-identified as LDS.
That sounds about right.
That is a massive difference.
Yes. Well, I think it goes to show the church doesn't account for dead people.
It's like counting children yes. in families that like aren't even active and
right.
haven't been to church since before those kids were born.
People in Tonga aren't removing the records.
Sure.
I mean, people everywhere aren't removing the records.
But 18% to 64%. Of the population is such a massive overreach.
Yeah. Zoinks.
In numbers. So that was really interesting to me. Mormon missionaries have been in Tonga since as early as 1891,
mm-hmm.
but actually didn't have a lot of success in the early days.
Yeah.
And there was this period of time in the 1920s where Mormons were prohibited from entering Tonga.
Which is dope.
There was the Passport Act of 1922 prohibited Mormons from entering yeah. Tonga.
They're sketchy. They're trying to indoctrinate people. It's, mm-hmm. you know, just shady imperialist bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, and that's all true. And the church was able to mend fences and get invited back in. But the fact that that was the case is interesting.
Yeah.
Then there's this sort of missionary boom in the decades following that ban.
Mm-hmm.
And we get John H. Groberg's story happening in the 1950s. And then we have John H. Groberg going back in 1968 and being the mission president. And this is a little tidbit that I think is hilarious.
Yeah.
So one of his initiatives when he was the mission president was that he wanted to host a 50th anniversary Golden Jubilee. And the reason he wanted to was because he'd had a dream as a missionary in the 50s that he would come back one day and host this 50th anniversary. The right. thing was, the 50th anniversary of what?
Right.
Nobody knew, including him.
Yeah. He couldn't actually wait 50 years post his mission.
Sure.
That's too long.
And his mission alone, you know, isn't cause for a jubilee. So like, what is the 50 years of what that we're celebrating? And then like, it just so happened that someone who the like wife of a former mission president was like, well, actually 50 years ago was the first mission conference. So he was like, great, that's what we're celebrating. But it Perfect. Was in retrospect. It wasn't like that was the plan all along.
That's so bizarre.
I just found that so hilarious, but mm-hmm. also exactly representative of what like a Mormon mission yeah. leader is doing.
Right. He had a delusion when he was on his mission, when he was under intense pressure and experiencing immense trauma. And he obsessed about it probably over the years until he was able to make it come to pass.
He made it happen through sheer force of will and delusion.
I'm happy for him. It's the power of the priesthood, baby.
So yeah, the church in Tonga, what an interesting history. I also thought it was interesting at the end of the movie when it's like, here's what everybody's up to now. It really focused on Tongan folks who have moved to the US.
Yes.
It was a lot of like, this person ended up in California. Isn't that great? This person ended up in the US somewhere. Isn't that great? And I was like, wait, what? So there's just this like uncritical imperialism running through the movie.
Right. Underlying what happened to the people choice. On the island? How's that going?
Right. And like, is moving to the US inherently better? So this is, I'm going to read two quotes from great reviews of the movie that get into this. One is from the New York Times, and these came out in 2001 when the movie was first released. Mm-hmm. The New York Times review, the movie's vision of a white American zealously spreading a puritanical brand of Christianity to South Seas Islanders is one only a true believer could relish. Mm-hmm. The Tongan natives resemble a 1950s National Geographic cliche of childlike pagans being taken in hand by wiser, smarter Westerners.
Right. Yep. Who they just inherently trust because she came all this way.
Yes.
Oh, and my gosh. Can we talk about one thing really quick that we in the breakdown did not reach?
Please.
The give me a white, a half white baby.
Well, yeah, we have to talk about that. I mean, I feel like that is the root of this argument that the New York Times review is making, right?
Yeah.
And it's just like, so there's this scene where John H. Groberg's character is walking with this young woman who he's been teaching, and she takes her clothes off and propositions him, basically. He's like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm saving myself for marriage, and you should too,
right?
And also I have this woman back home, and I'm gonna be true to her. But then there's a scene right after it with her mom, and she's like, how dare you reject my daughter? At the very least, can you give us a half white baby?
Right. Give us your seed.
Give us your seed.
Yeah.
And the movie just puts that out there and walks away.
Yeah. Never to be brought up again.
And I'm like, wait, why? Why do they want a half white baby?
Right. What is this adding to the narrative?
And it just makes these Tongan women seem... it's just caricatures of real people.
Right.
And the mom is like, oh, give us this halfway baby. And when he says no, and shows her a picture of his girlfriend back home, she just cries and is like, she's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Like, of course you can't, you know, abandon her. And it's like, what is happening here?
It's so strange.
The layers of weird racism and imperialism.
Yeah,
it's just like too much.
Childlike pagans. There you go. That's my example.
Yes. It makes me think too of the first funeral scene where they're mourning in, you know, as is traditional in their culture. And he's so like, they're like really over the top. And there's this a kind professional of circus-y mourner. Ooh, music like, playing, making fun of it. There's also a fair amount of fat phobia towards the Tongan characters. Sure. It's just bad all around.
Yep.
Okay, another review. This is from the AV Club, 2001. With the help of his adoring native sidekick, Gorham, who plays John H. Groberg, sets about turning the Tongan people into non-smoking, non-drinking, tie-wearing, English-speaking Mormons. He succeeds with almost comic ease. Without bothering with newfangled moral or cultural relativism, the other side of heaven takes it as a given that accepting Christianity and becoming Westernized is an inherent good that benefits everyone. Accordingly, it doesn't feature a single character who feels otherwise.
Right.
The Tongan people all but worship Gorham and his Western ways, and by the end of the film, they seem prepared to move to Utah, vote for Ike, and bake apple pies and stitch American flags in their spare time.
Yeah.
And then literally at the end, the movie's like, here are the ones who made it to America.
They did it.
I just can't believe that no one involved in making this, but also no one involved in the leadership of the church, paused and said, like, are we representing this culture well? Are we even equipped to tell this story? Mm-hmm. And is this a story that makes us look good?
Right. Can we trust this return missionary's stories? You know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Which, of course, because he's a nice young man in good standing in the church, of course you can trust him.
Right. One thing I read in an interview with the director is he said that before the movie was officially released, like in theaters, there was a showing for the First Presidency and Quorum of the 12 at the Joseph Smith Memorial Building. Mm. And he was like, and it was like Mitch Davis and John H. Groberg were there showing it to them. And they were like so anxious about how the leaders of the church were going to feel about it. And the story is that at the end, like, President Hinckley, who was the prophet at the time, walked up to them, tapped them with his cane, and was like, that was great. It's going to do a lot of good in the world. Just over everybody's head.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you really surprised?
No, but come on.
Disappointed.
I'm not surprised, but I am a little, and this is me like being really vulnerable here. I am surprised that my 18-year-old self did not have more awareness. Because I don't, like I said, I don't remember loving this movie, but I definitely wasn't like, this is racist.
You might have seen it if it wasn't in the, if it weren't in the context of Mormonism.
Yeah. But that's really alarming to me that because of the way everything was, because of the way a movie that, like this was framed within Mormonism, and because Mormonism was this frame through which we were taught to view the whole world, and that frame was like unimpeachable. I just watched something like this pretty uncritically.
Yeah.
And was like, it must be good. It's trying to be good, and the people in it are good. And John H. Groberg must be good. It's alarming to see it in yourself. There's a scene where a boy falls from a mango tree and his dad scoops him up, runs him to John H. Groberg's hut, and it's like, save my child. You you have the power to save him. And he like prays and gives the kid a blessing. And it seems like he feels inspired to like help the boy with his breathing, and the boy survives. And so watching that, I'm thinking, why does he need to be the one to do this? Didn't they have the priesthood in Tonga? Like, he wasn't the only one on the island with the priesthood. Because, and I double checked this to be sure that I was right. And it's true that even though the church did not grant the priesthood to Black members of the church until the 1970s, they did allow Polynesian and Pacific Islander members to have the priesthood. Obviously, that's a whole can of worms, and there's no justification for any of those priesthood bans based on race. It's all stupid bullshit. But they did have the priesthood in Tonga.
Well, at one point he pulls out all the paperwork for all the priesthood
ordinations.
The priesthood ordinations, and it's like a
big stack, right?
Right.
They're organizing branches. There's a branch president there who is a Tongan man. I mean, the priesthood was on the island. He wasn't the only one who could give a priesthood blessing. So it's things like this where it's just like he's being elevated because he's a white man from outside of the culture, outside of this like quote unquote primitive culture. And so he must have the answers and the authority and the power.
Yeah, and he's also conveniently the author of the story.
Right, of course, of course. Moving off of racism to just horrific sexism and, like, purity culture fear mongering, because that's another delightful theme in the movie. We have to talk about the scene where a boat comes along and says, we have room for three women.
Yeah, that's pretty horrific.
Yes.
Very special moment in the movie.
So three young women like walk away from their families and go right. with these random strange men. And the subtext is they're being like sex trafficked.
Right. Yeah, their families are screaming after yeah. them.
Don't go, don't go. And the branch president's daughter goes. She's one of the mm-hmm. women who goes. So cut to the very next scene. John H. Groberg is baptizing this Tongan woman, the one who propositioned him for a halfway baby, but who's now seniors of her ways and is like, I want to be a pure Mormon, and so I'm going to get baptized. She's getting baptized. In the same montage, the branch president's daughter is being led into a back room by this like old white man, presumably to have sex.
Horrific.
And I was like, whoa, these are presented as your options.
Yeah, what a choice.
It's like purity mm-hmm. till marriage or sex trafficking. It is one of the darkest things I've seen in a long time. And I'm watching House of the Dragon.
Right. They really went for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a real HBO moment.
It was extremely troubling. And then there's a hurricane and this young woman who's been sex trafficked, her body washes ashore.
Just washes
and I
up.
Was like, there's just absolutely no way.
No,
that washes any up of this alive. Is real. There's right. no way, Katie.
Right. That hurricane was nuts. I was thinking, yeah. too, this is what literally all of the money, all of the $7 million mm-hmm. budget went to. Because I was like, where's the $7 million going to?
Mm-hmm.
The hurricane sequence.
Yeah.
But yeah, her living body washes up on the beach after the craziest hurricane, which like destroyed everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, didn't happen. I don't trust this guy.
I don't trust the stories. They're just, it's funny too, because we're getting ready to do an episode of the podcast about Educated, which is a memoir.
Right.
And it's funny to me how much less skepticism I feel about the stories Tara Westover is telling in Educated versus yeah. the stories John H. Groberg is telling in his memoir mm-hmm. and this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And and I've been thinking about that because in preparation for the episode on Educated, I've been like looking at what friends of mine have said about Educated on social media. And my like true believing Mormon friends are all like, she's a liar. She's exaggerating. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, really? You think so? I feel like her stories seem really yeah, plausible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's this skepticism the other direction from the believing Mormons towards a story that doesn't make Mormonism out to be the hero.
Yeah. And though anyway, it doesn't like really outright call out the religion. I mean,
I know.
It portrays the villains in her story as being fringe.
Yes.
You know, though they're active in the church, they're still, you know, clearly weirdos.
And I don't mean to get too into the weeds about Educated yet, because I know we're going to do a whole episode on it. I'm just saying, like, it's fascinating to me, like, the genre of a memoir and the level of trust or skepticism that an audience brings to it, depending on their pre-existing beliefs.
Right.
And again, as an 18-year-old believing Mormon watching this movie, I didn't have a strong negative reaction. And now I'm like, this is nonsense.
Yeah.
I don't believe most of the stories and I find them dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Not a very uplifting story for me.
So wouldn't recommend a rewatch of The Other Side of Heaven. It's actually kind of hard to find. It's not streaming. Mm-hmm. Even on Amazon, you can't rent it. And I mm-hmm. thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
We ended up streaming it. I streamed it on BYU TV, like their free web page. But that was the only place I could find it.
Yeah.
So no need to seek this one out.
Not worth seeking out at all. It's pretty pretty boring considering how over dramatized it is. It's long. It's a full length movie for no good reason. Mm-hmm. And it's awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just generally awful. So
yeah,
give it a skip. Glad we watched it.
Glad we watched it because it puts some things into perspective for me.
Yeah.
I feel like more and more, the more we talk about our experiences with Mormon media that we first encountered when we were young, the more I realize, like, oh, your frontal lobe forming fully at 25 sure does make a big difference.
Yeah, it's like night and day, man.
Like something really clicked on in my mid-20s, and I was like, wait, all of this doesn't hold up anymore. And it's just becoming clearer and clearer to me as we encounter more of these things.
I know. And now you have to rewatch them and deal with the horror of, I was okay with this.
Yeah. Yeah. Fine. There's like a little bit of shame there. I'm going to be honest.
I don't think you should feel shame about it, but I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I definitely can't relate because I was 10.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You're not accountable for any of this stuff.
No, I don't hold myself accountable at all. So I'm just good. I'm feeling pretty all right about it.
You know who should be ashamed? Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway, yeah.
And I bet she leaves this off the CV.
She probably had it scrubbed off the internet.
It's only the Mormons who are like, we got Anne Hathaway, everybody. Man.
And the Mormons just love this stupid movie. Reading the reviews, just like the IMDb reviews, was like mind numbing.
I mean, it has a terrible score on like Rotten Tomatoes.
For sure.
It's just got, and that's another thing. I never, my 2001 18-year-old brain never would have even thought to look up a review of the movie and see what the outside world thought of it. But right. Doing that, I'm just like, oh, yeah, everybody hated it. And everybody knew even then. It wasn't like in 2001, we didn't know what was racist or imperialist. Like, everybody knew that this was bad.
And as a Mormon, like all of the True Blue Mormon reviewers are like, this is a great movie for anyone. And here's why. And all of the non-Mormon reviewers are like, this is unwatchable if you're not LDS.
Yep.
And so I'm going to trust them.
Yeah. And I think it's like a wake up call for all Mormons. I wish I had realized, like, you're not seeing the world the way that the rest of the world is seeing it.
No.
And I do think that Mormons are aware of that. And it's like a badge of honor. Like, well, yeah, because we see it through the lens of truth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, you don't.
Right. The rest of the world, the majority of the world, is not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry, pals.
One last note that I had written down. So John H. Groberg says that the people in Tonga couldn't say his name, Elder Groberg, so they called him Kolipoki.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout the movie, they call him Kolipoki. And just in my notes, I wrote, Kolipoki is an imperialist bitch.
Amen. And on that note,
wrap it up.
Hurrah for Israel.
Well, like we said, next episode is all about Educated by Tara Westover, so feel free to pull out your copy and brush up on it for the discussion.
A little light reading.
Oh gosh, yeah, a light reading. It is not, but it's definitely got a lot more depth than The Other Side of Heaven.
Yeah. Yes.
To say the least. In the meantime, follow us everywhere at Please Bless Pod.
Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Subscribe to us on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
We post our episodes there so you can watch us talk about it and not just listen.
Mm-hmm.
And follow us on all the streaming platforms and leave us a nice review.
Yes.
If you feel so inclined.
All of that, please. And then if you want to get in touch with us, send us episode ideas or other thoughts. Our email address is pleasebless pod@gmail.com.
And that's all, folks.
That's all. Hurrah for Israel.
Please bless this podcast. Please bless Annie Hathaway.
Amen.
Amen.